What's up and welcome to the NYC Video Podcast, a show about the film and video industry here in New York and the great people that are making it happen. Each week, we interview New York-based filmmakers to learn more about their craft and process, and they'll share professional advice and tips with our listeners. On today's show, I'll be talking with Jax Menconi. She's a super talented makeup artist who I've worked with on countless corporate and commercial videos throughout the years, and I've recommended her to tons of productions because I know that she's a total pro and she brings her A-game to every job that she's on. Now, I don't know the first thing about makeup. What's in it, how to apply it, or how a makeup artist runs his or her business. That's why today's conversation was really helpful for me to understand what makeup artists do besides making talent look great on camera. Throughout the past year, hair and makeup artists have been hit really hard due to the pandemic. Unlike camera, lighting, and sound departments, makeup artists have to spend a lot of time standing next to talent in order to apply makeup to their faces and bodies. Makeup artists have had to drastically change their day-to-day workflows in order to keep themselves safe, along with the people they're applying makeup to. They've also had to find new and creative workarounds to earn income in order to compensate for the drop-off in work throughout the pandemic. For makeup artists and freelance filmmakers, it's been more important than ever to get out there and network, network, network. And there's really nobody I know who does a better job than Jax. She hosts weekly meetups, she posts on Facebook groups, she creates content via TikTok and Instagram, and she mentors young makeup artists in the early stages of their careers. She also does a fantastic job promoting her services through her website as well. Jax really understands the power of social media to stay on people's radar and alert new clients about the services she offers. Each week, I'm blown away by how much useful material she creates and shares with others, and she provides a ton of value to her followers by teaching them makeup application techniques. Bottom line, Jax is as talented a makeup artist as she is an entrepreneur, and I really respect that. And even though she hustles her butt off, she's one of the most down-to-earth and approachable people I've ever had the pleasure to work with. I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode because Jax does a great job explaining the nuances of working as a freelance makeup artist and shares a ton of useful advice about her process. So, without further ado, let's get into today's interview with Jax Menconi. Today's episode was sponsored by the Available app. Finding qualified crew members for a film and TV production is a daunting and time-consuming task. The Available app makes it easy to streamline the booking process and gives you full control of hiring and management by utilizing your network to find and communicate with your crew. It allows you to quickly see who's available to work on set immediately. Download the Available app today on the Apple and Google Play stores. So thanks for being on the show today. I'm here with Jax. She's a really amazing makeup artist based here in New York. I've worked with her for years and she agreed to be on today's show just to talk a little bit about her craft. So thanks for being on the show, Jax.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
Cool. So as you know, like I think I mentioned to you before, like this whole podcast is basically about educating just the community at large of, you know, in the film industry and the video industry about each of our crafts and what we do and what we're doing. And right now, just due to COVID and it being winter, I think a lot of people are really kind of hard up for work or just kind of looking to network or just need to hear a voice, basically. So that's why I'm going to try to ask you a few questions today. And I guess let's just get started at the beginning. How did you like get into the makeup world?
You know, it's funny because I didn't start out in my professional career as a makeup artist. And in fact, I really had no thought to ever become a makeup artist. So this was really something that didn't necessarily fall into my lap, but it was like an aha moment for me in around 2009. Before that, I had gone to school at Rider University, and I studied radio and television broadcasting, and I had I'm losing my language, Tom. This is what happens. This is what happens when you're in a pandemic.
I'm making nervous.
I had every thought that I was going to be a producer, a television producer. And so when I graduated from Rider, I worked at CNBC for a little while in their on-air promos department. And then I ended up leaving CNBC to go to a place called Daz Media, which is no longer in business, I don't think anyway. But they did primarily industrials and in-house sales training, pharmaceutical commercial kind of things. Like it was a creative media agency. And I went from being a production coordinator there, that's what I was hired to do, and fairly quickly actually became their in-house video producer. And so that's really where I was shining and I was doing really well and I enjoyed it for the most part. Fast forward a few years later and I just wasn't happy. I was really good at that job, but I just wasn't happy. I didn't see myself continuing on that path for 15, 20, 30, 40 more years. I just didn't see it happening. Really, it was at that time that I actually don't remember the exact thought that I had, but I do remember the makeup artists that I would hire walking in with smiles on their face, doing their job, doing it well, knowing exactly what I needed from them, and then leaving at the end of the day with a smile on their face. Sure. And when they were leaving, my job was not ending. My job was kind of first starting, even more so because at such a small production house, I had to wear many hats, as most people do in a lot of arenas, but especially in smaller production houses or creative media agencies. So I'd be up for another 24 to 36 hours trying to get the edit done and turn this around for these very important projects that these pharmaceutical companies just needed to have by a certain date for no reason. And so we were just up at all hours of the night getting that done. So that became very taxing on my health and my life. And I just remember thinking back to those makeup artists and how happy they always seemed when they were, you know, arriving to set and then leaving at the end of the day. And I was like, you know what? I've always loved makeup, although I've never thought about it as a career choice before. It's just something that never entered my mind as a possibility for me. So I quit where I was and went to makeup school. And that's kind of how I got started. It was a very quick decision that I made. I know that it's hard to make huge life changes, especially when you're kind of leaping with no net. You know, at that time I had $110,000 in student loan debt.
Wow. Yeah.
to leave a nice cushy producing job with a great salary at the time, to go to freelance makeup artistry with no connections and no experience was definitely scary, but that's what I did.
That's interesting because like I've never heard of a producer transitioning into a makeup artist. I usually hear the opposite where like someone from the makeup artist or like a crew position like DP mm-hmm. or director kind of moves into being a producer. So, I mean, how did that help you as like a makeup artist? Because you already knew what the producers were looking for and you kind of knew how producers worked. Did that help you out during the transition?
Oh, absolutely. I think that was one of the most attractive things about my experience to people is that I knew exactly what producer or a director and also the editor, because I used to sit in with my editors. I knew what they were going to need and what they were looking for and certainly what they were not looking for. And that I think was a huge asset. I knew the language, you know, walking my first day on set as a makeup artist, I knew the language. I didn't have to learn it. It wasn't something that I had to ask, what do you mean by that? I already knew all of this. So I really do think that that part was an asset. Although I will say that it took a while for people to take me seriously as a makeup artist because most of them had previously known me as a production coordinator and then a producer. So to go from one position to a completely, completely different position, I think was confusing for most of my network. And I also think that looking back, I do remember getting the feeling from some of my connections that, okay, how long is this going to last until she, like, is this going to be a serial thing for her that she's constantly switching careers? But I mean, here we are about 12 years later and I'm still going strong. So
sure. Then that's actually something that I'm going to talk about in a later episode. But transitioning, I think, from one role to another is a big mm-hmm. thing. I think a lot of people who do the same role over years, kind of, they either get burnt out or they just kind of want to try something different. Did you find it hard to kind of like rebrand yourself from a producer to becoming a makeup artist? And if so, like, how did you go about rebranding yourself?
Yeah, you know, that's a really great question. The whole thing was nerve-wracking because I had no guidance in the makeup artistry world. Unfortunately, one of my dear, dear friends and makeup artist that I used to hire, Marianne Muro, who I really truly believe would have been my mentor throughout this whole entire thing, she passed away right when I was going to makeup school. So she probably would have been the one to for me to kind of lean on and maybe assist, maybe get my foot in the door that way and just be able to be with her because she was so amazing. Just as an artist and as a person in general. So I had to kind of do it all on my own. I had to figure it out. I had to take a ton of business classes. I read so many business books. I still do, as well as marketing books. You know, I had help from a few friends in the marketing industry, but really it was tough. It wasn't easy. And especially as a young and green makeup artist, I really didn't know where to start. So I just kind of did what I thought. And then I just kept learning as I was going. And then, I mean, I'm still learning.
Sure, that
doesn't stop.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. Like, I guess like being like a crafts person who works on set, doing makeup or doing lighting or doing camera, it's important to learn that craft and do it well on set. But it's also, I think, equally as important to bone up on some like business 101, learn how to market yourself, learn how to brand yourself. There's so much content on YouTube and the internet basically on how to help you in your career to do that stuff.
Yeah.
I think like because I was interested in that, I think that really helped me out a lot throughout my career. So yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, back in around 2009, when I was really first getting started with makeup, there weren't too many authorities on what I was specifically doing on, you know, on like YouTube University, if you will.
Sure.
So I didn't know where to start there or what was right and what was wrong and who really knew what they were talking about in that regard. It was a challenge. It certainly was a challenge. And looking back, I know that I made a ton of mistakes, but I mean, any business owner does when they're first starting out. I don't know anybody that's ever had a perfect ride in their career. So it is what it is.
And like, you know, on the theme of like authoritative figures and stuff, that were there any kind of makeup artists that you kind of really looked up to or you admired? What's your benchmark basically of what makes a good makeup artist and what makes a great makeup artist? Like, is there something that you kind of look out for or that you admire from other makeup artists that you've worked with maybe?
Oh yeah, for sure. I feel like this could be a whole other topic, a whole other podcast topic in itself. I could go on for many hours talking about how amazing I think other people are, really, really and truly.
Sure.
But just to make it as concise as I can, what I look for in a makeup artist that I admire is not solely artistry. An artist is incredible, don't get me wrong. And makeup artists are absolutely artists. Maybe not me, because I don't really fancy myself an artist. I can't draw or anything, but I can literally just, I can do makeup on anybody, but give me a pad and paper and I'm going to sink that ship right away. But what I find the most attractive in a business person who is an artist is just the business side of things. I think that that is something to be admired. If somebody not only has the artsy part of the craft down, but also is a good business person and very smart, because it's one thing to just be the artist, but to also understand the business behind it and the industry behind it, that is something that I admire in a major, major way. And there are so many artists that I could, you know, name drop right now, but sure. The two that come to mind that I personally know are Sonia Roselli from Chicago, but now in Texas, and also Margina Dennis, who's a New York-based artist as well. They are phenomenal. They have helped me so much in my career. They'll never realize how much they've helped me.
Sure.
It's really, truly amazing how great they've been.
Yeah. It's not only like what you do on set, but it's also the other stuff that's also important for me too. It's just like working with people that I like to work with, like people that are friendly on set and people that are pleasant to be around, just kind of makes you appreciate them so much more. On so many other levels, because not only they are friendly, but they also have set etiquette and they know how to kind of act and behave themselves on set and how to, you know, just make it for a pleasant day for not only talent, but also the crew as well.
I love that you said set etiquette.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite buzzwords. I work with like, you know, a bunch of like younger people and I see them, you know, on their phones all the time and just kind of like taking Instagram photos when they should be working and stuff like that. So that's one thing that I always try to talk to younger people about is set etiquette and like learning how to behave yourself on set.
Yep.
I've worked with like some really talented people who are oblivious to like things going on around them. And it's one of those things that you always just kind of have to be mindful of when you're working around other people.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
So there's a bunch of different types of makeup. There's like, you can do bridal, you can do video, you can do photo, you can do special effects. Is there like a particular school that like, let's say it's someone that's just starting out here in New York that they would go to learn all this stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really think that going to makeup school, you know what? Let me backtrack a little bit. Going to good makeup schools is never a bad idea. So I went to a place called Makeup Designery in New York City, or people call it MUD for short. And I had a great time there. The teachers were fantastic when I was there. And they do everything. They teach you how to do everything. I only took the beauty makeup for the media portion of the available courses, but they have a full menu of courses, including everything that you listed, and also including hairstyling for all that stuff. So it's not only just beauty makeup for the media, it's beauty makeup for the media, hairstyling, bridal, special effects, character makeup, all of the above, and you can learn it there. What they didn't teach us when I was there, at least, I don't know if this has changed, was the business side of things. The artistry, they taught us the basics of artistry and sanitizing and how do you stand in front of a client and all that kind of stuff. The basics they taught us, and it was amazing. The business part of things, I really wish they had gone into.
Sure.
I really do.
Yeah.
That part was lacking, but everything else about the school at the time was absolutely amazing. And they're global. So I think that there's one in LA somewhere. For sure, there's still one in New York. And I forgot where there's another one. I don't remember if it's in London or if it's Paris or something. It's somewhere over there. Somewhere over there.
Sure.
And they're just a phenomenal school to go to. Absolutely.
So for those people who don't know, and I consider myself one of those people, what does a makeup artist do? Because usually when I've worked with you on set, we come, we say hello, have some chatter, and then you go off to a little room and you do your thing. And then the person who walks in there comes out looking completely different, which is kind of amazing. It's like Superman walking into a phone booth and then coming out as Superman. What's the day in the life of a makeup artist on set?
I love that comparison. So, you know, we do more than what people assume our role is on set. At least good makeup artists do. That's as much as I can tell you. When we get there, we have to make sure that the area is clean and sanitized. So not just like, you know, there's nothing on a table. Like we have to wipe it down. We have to make sure everything's clean and sanitized before we can even start unpacking. And then we go through like the regular kind of things that we do as a makeup artist. We're assessing skin before we put the makeup on. We're looking at mood boards or inspo boards from directors or whoever, if we were so lucky to receive those. Then we do the makeup, then we're on set for the rest of the day, right? But what we also do, which people don't really think about or speak too much on, is prepare the talent mentally to be on set. So whatever that means for that person, for the talent, whether it's somebody who has never been on camera before, maybe it's a sales training video for an internal pharmaceutical company for an event or something like that, and they're being interviewed or they're going to be on green screen talking about whatever drug is launching or, you know, what have you. So if that person is extremely nervous, we are able to recognize that and we kind of talk them off the ledge a little bit and get them excited, or if not excited, at the very least, not super anxious to be stepping out of that room and then being on camera. We're like the producer's first line of defense, basically, when it comes to talent. And, you know, whether that means what I just explained as somebody being nervous, or if that's somebody being in a bad mood, and we kind of might get the majority of that bad mood put on us, and we try to figure it out and make sure that whatever we can do is done to make that person a little bit happier. Sure. Before they move on set. Just, you know, whatever kind of personality is sitting in our chair, we do our very best to not manipulate, that's not the best word, but to help in a way that will allow the rest of the day to run as smoothly as possible.
Yeah. And one thing that I've also noticed that you do is before like talent sits in or as they're sitting in, I've noticed that you talk to me for about lighting, you talk to the DP about camera, which I think is really important because those three departments work so closely together, because the way the person looks on set is really dictated by what kind of lens the DP is using or what kind of lighting is being used. So do you think it's important for makeup artists to have like a good working understanding of how lighting affects makeup or a certain kind of lens affects makeup?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's part of our job. We have to know what lighting or what are you shooting?
Sure.
Is it daylight? What is it? You know, what is the difference between someone being, you know, what we in the industry call hot or shiny? Because they're two different things. And one is my fault and the other is your fault.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right? Right? So like we have to know that. We have to understand the difference. And if we're looking at the monitor and we're seeing somebody that is super bright in an area that looks like there's a lot of light shining on this one particular area, we have to be able to decipher, is that person shiny? Is that sweat? Or is it just a little bit too much light and the light has to be turned down a little bit?
Sure.
Or should there be, you know, something to dim the light on top of it?
Sure.
You know, whatever it is. But yeah, absolutely. We have to know what kind of lens you're using. What are you shooting in? Mm-hmm. What is the deliverable? Like, where is this going?
Yeah.
Is this going to live on the internet only? Is this going to be on a huge screen at an event, or is it going to be a national commercial? Like, all of these things come into play for makeup artists, as they do for you as well.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, oftentimes, if we notice that a person's nose is shiny, we basically assess, like, is it just some powder that's going to bring down the shininess of the person's nose? Or is it, do I bring a diffusion a little bit closer to kind of soften, wrap that light? Or maybe sometimes it's both. So yeah, I think having a basic understanding, at least, of the other person's department really helps the communication. And especially when you're working with like high-end talent and they're only there for 15 minutes, being able to kind of really quickly communicate with other people and figure out strategies on how to make the person look great is super important, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And also working with people that you know and trust. So I love working with you, Tom, and there are a few other people that I really, really love working with as well. And there are some people that you are able to work with. And as a freelancer, it's hard to be able to work with the same people every single time you're working, obviously, because you're not working for the same company. But when you have a relationship with people in other departments, and you get to work with them for over years at a time, it can often lend itself to a glance and just knowing what is happening behind the eyes of the other person. Like, okay, the director just said they're hot or they're shiny, for just because we were just talking about that example. And then maybe, you know, you and I might look at each other, or you and another makeup artist, or, you know, whoever is on set, if you have a relationship with them. And we can then determine, like, who is it? Is it you or is it me? Who's
exactly
up?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And, you know, while we're talking about like the camera lighting portion of these shoots, one thing that happens every year is there's these new kind of crazes about increasing the resolution of these cameras. It went from 1080 to 2.7 to 4K. Now we're at like, I don't know, 12K or something like that. Has the increase in resolution in cameras affected the way that you apply makeup? Because I imagine like you probably see a lot more pores and like mustaches and stuff like that. How has that affected your workflow?
A lot.
Yeah, I can imagine. You should charge by the resolution of the camera. Like, oh, you're shooting this much? Yeah. It's going to cost you this much.
Exactly. Well, you know, gone are the days where you can just pack on pancake makeup and then it look normal. That was standard def. That was like news anchors in the 90s and even early 2000s when that happened. So as the cameras and the lenses are getting better and better and higher resolution, I actually say better in quotes because we don't always want to see everything that close up. Sure. And that clearly, but it is a challenge. It absolutely is a challenge. And the challenge doesn't always come with the application or the technique necessarily. I mean, surely that is part of it. Don't get me wrong. It is part of it. But the challenge instead is really coming from the expectation of either the client or maybe the director, but not so much because they typically understand what is happening, obviously, because they've been doing this for a while, hopefully. But the expectation of the audience, whoever is seeing the final product. So if you're shooting something on like 8K and then it's going on television or wherever it's going, if the audience is expecting just perfect skin with no pores and no hair out of place and just not realistic views of what people look like, that kind of becomes the issue because there's nothing that I can do as a makeup artist that will erase skin texture. Colorization, sure, I can color correct and make a blotchy skin, a blotchy kind of red skin look more even. But when it comes to skin texture and levels, different levels on the skin and pores, that's not stuff that goes away. And it's human to have texture and pores. So when people expect that seamless, completely flawless look with an 8K camera shooting, that's just not something that is a reality.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that's where the challenge comes in. Of course, you need to know how to do the makeup the best you possibly can for those extremely high resolutions. But really, I feel that the huge challenge is in the eye of the beholder, if you will. It's in the expectation of whoever is watching.
So I've never worked as a producer or as a makeup artist. Do you ever check with talent, or does production ever check with talent if they have allergies prior to a shoot?
Yeah, producers don't usually jump to that question, but I absolutely do. I have an infographic that I send out before every shoot to the producers to make sure that they pass that along to talent. And that just kind of gives talent a guideline of what to expect from the day so that they don't show up a certain way. And that would mean us taking more time in my chair before they're able to get on set. And in that graphic, it does say, if you have any specific allergies, you have to let production know as soon as possible before the shoot day so that we can be prepared if we need to get different products.
Okay, so March 13th, 2020. Big turning point in our industry. For me, I know it's Friday the 13th. It's a day I'll never forget. Corona happened. What was the lead up to Corona when everything started happening, and what were you going through? Where were you and what happened?
I was on Long Island City on the 13th, and I was on my last shoot until I think it was August.
Wow.
Was my next shoot that I had. Yeah, that was a crazy time. I mean, not for anything. We're still in that time.
Sure.
That time has not stopped.
Yeah.
Sure, production has picked back up a little bit, but it surely is not the same that it was before March 13th, 2020. I remember us waiting to hear the confirmation that we had to shut everything down and that that day was actually going to be the last day of production for quite some time. And we were doing a pickup shoot with the host of the television show that I work on, True Conviction, on the ID Network. And that is a traveling show. And so we had just finished the first 5 episodes of the season, and we still had 5 more. We still had 5 more to shoot. And then, you know, life was like, nope, you don't. You're not going to be shooting those things as planned. We were going to go to Alaska. We were going to go all over the place shooting these new episodes. And that just was not a possibility anymore. And it was scary. You know, it was scary because not only did we have no idea when we were going to be able to shoot again, we didn't know really if we would, because we're a television show and, you know, what happens to the shows that are mid-season shooting. And then just, we don't know what's going on anymore. We just don't know what's going on. Would we have to wait a year? Would we have to wait 2 years? Would they kind of just cut us off? Like, I didn't know how that worked. So it was scary. It was really scary.
Sure. And yeah, I imagine like all departments, probably the makeup department is probably hair and makeup have probably been the hardest hit because it requires so much physical contact. Like your whole job is physical contact with people. Like how has the makeup industry kind of changed?
Well, there are quite a few things. And, you know, makeup and hair for sure work very, very close together. So yes, you're 100% right when you say that we have been hit the hardest as far as anybody in the production world. Our whole entire career exists 6 to 12 inches away from somebody's face. So that's always fun and exciting to know that this COVID life is, the COVID can be spread by simply speaking in front of somebody. And that's how we live in our work. So what has changed the most, I think, is being extremely vocal in our needs. And I think this is going to be happening forever more. I mean, I was always pretty vocal about what I needed in order to do my job. But now it's like there's no wiggle room on this. First of all, off the bat, we need to be masking and we need to be wearing a shield. A mask and a shield, not just a mask and not just a shield, a mask and a shield as makeup artists and as hair. Because the person in front of us won't be able to wear a mask the whole time. So we have to be protected. And if we're not protecting ourselves, that means we're also not protecting the next person that's in our chair. So that has to be a no-brainer and across the board followed. But what else has to be very vocalized in the entire community is that we need to be put in a separate room. Like, gone are the days that, you know, for a corporate shoot or whatever we're doing, the makeup artist is just kind of thrown in the same large or maybe not so large conference room in a building, in some corporate building, just using the window ledge in the back corner while everybody else is setting up to shoot in that same room. And the makeup artist is just has like the window ledge to set up and do a quick makeup on somebody before they sit in. Those days are gone. We need a separate room because we are the ones that are the most at risk. And we have the person right in front of our face, only one person in the room at a time. And we need ample time to clean, sanitize, and disinfect our station and then reset our station. And cleaning, sanitizing, and disinfecting are three completely different things, and they have to be done in that order. So it's crazy. And a lot of us were already doing those steps. I would say the majority of us were doing the cleaning, sanitizing, disinfecting, all that kind of stuff, and being able to reset our station between each person. But being very diligent about only having one person in our area at a time, that was something that was never done. At least in my experience, I remember just people walking in, the producer, the director, or another talent, somebody's assistant, whoever it was, walking in and just being in the room with us while we're trying to work. That can no longer happen. It's just one person and us in the room at a time, unless, of course, the room is huge and can abide by social distancing or even more than social distancing. Also, there's no food or drink in our room. So the talent should not be eating breakfast or snacks or whatever while they're in our chair. That has to be done somewhere else. And yeah, they're just like a lot more little stupid rules. And they're not just rules. They're just kind of common sense things when you're trying to work through a global pandemic.
Sure, sure. Something that nobody was really prepared for. So I think we're all kind of wrapping our head around what's, you know, the new normal, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with this whole coronavirus pandemic thing going on, there's this quote that Winston Churchill had. He said it's something along the lines of like, never let a disaster go to waste. And by that, he meant basically like, what can you do in the middle of a disaster to better yourself or better your community and stuff like that? So how has like the pandemic allowed you to kind of pivot your business? From what I've seen on social media, a lot of makeup artists are in the process of like pivoting and figuring out new ways to make up for the lack of shoots at the current time. What have you started doing differently since COVID has happened?
Well, when I first started doing makeup in 2009 and I started reading about business and really getting into what it means to be wealthy and how to build wealth and diversifying and all of these books that I was reading, it became very clear to me even back then when I was first starting out that I should absolutely not be throwing all of my eggs in one basket. And so in 2012, I branched out and partnered with a product brokerage company that allowed me to be offering virtual consultations and in-person consultations since 2012.
Sure.
And so I've been building up that business since then. And lo and behold, now I'm so thankful and grateful that I actually did that back then, because it was a no-brainer to continue leveraging that business through this whole time. And my retail sales, and I'm not a salesperson, Tom. Like, I am a terrible salesperson. I worked in retail for a short time. In high school, I worked at The Gap. That was my part-time job. I was terrible. Couldn't sell anything. Like, I was really bad. Then I worked at Sephora when I was going through makeup school, or right after makeup school, rather. Then I worked at Saks Fifth Avenue as a counter manager. Somehow they hired me as a counter manager. Who knows why? That will always baffle me. I was horrific at sales. So I'm not a salesperson, but my retail sales through this pandemic have almost quadrupled, because people are home, people are still buying stuff, and people are looking for ways to feel connected, and they still need to be serviced in some way within the beauty industry. Now, whether that's guys who are looking for, you know, what to do with their skin because they've never seen their skin look like this before, sure, with masks and all of that kind of stuff, and just being home all the time, or whatever the issue is, or if that's business women trying to figure out what they should be putting on their face in preparation for their next Zoom meeting. Whatever the case may be, this is a business that I've always been building in the background. And now it finally came to the forefront after March 13th. So I was so thankful to be able to do that. And when other people may not have had the thought to go that route and or to even think about something like that. So where I can now leverage this business as it becomes bigger and bigger in my life, this is really where I want to go. And I'm able to help other people do the same through this company. But yet it's scary out there because to go from being booked on set, regardless of what the job is, I could have been booked on set 5 days a week for 5 weeks in a row without a day off. Or even 7 days a week for like 3 weeks in a row without a day off. Like that was not unheard of for me to be working nonstop. And to go from that to literally a shoot on March 13th, and then the next shoot that I had was August 11th. And then after that, it was very sporadic, maybe a few days here and there on the, you know, while we were shooting the TV show, the rest of the episodes of the TV show. But I mean, those were the only jobs that I had, the TV show. If I wasn't booked as the makeup artist on this TV show, I would have had absolutely nothing, no set days at all.
Sure. Anyway, so you've been doing this for a while. What would you say would be like your biggest nightmare on set? And what did you learn from that? Because we all have like our days on set where something goes wrong or everything goes wrong. And as much as it sucks at the time, looking back, you learn a lot about what not to do, or if this happens, I should do this and this and this. Has there ever been like a moment on set or a thing that happened that really kind of like sucked and that you learned from?
Yes. And this answer could go in a couple different directions. So I could choose from a couple different instances. So I'm just going to ask you, sidebar, how you'd like me to, you know, proceed with it. Because I could go into something that is more talent showing up to set in a crazy way, or I can go into not knowing how to handle sexual harassment.
Oh, wow. Oh, well. Well, if you want to talk about both, that might be
interesting. It depends on what you want me to go into.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think talking about both, because especially with like the sexual harassment thing, you know, I think from my experience, predominantly the makeup artists have been women on set, and that's definitely a theme that's been ongoing because our industry is predominantly made of men. Have you ever experienced any kind of like sexual harassment on set, and how did that play out? What did you do? Because I'm sure other makeup artists are probably going to listen to the show. Is there anything that you experienced on set that they might have experienced too, and maybe they can avoid it or know how to avoid it?
Yeah, I think I know very few women, if any, who haven't experienced some form of sexual harassment on some level, whether in their personal life or in the workplace. And I'm certainly not exempt from this. I have a couple different stories, but I'll just go with one. When I was first starting out, I was, you know, working on set. And although this isn't, I feel like even now I'm trying to qualify it. It wasn't like the worst thing to happen, obviously, and you'll understand when I actually say it. But when somebody that you work with and that you have a respected relationship, or you respect them in the business relationship, like taps you on the ass at work, it's very weird. And when that happened to me, you know, it was actually a kick in the ass on an elevator, which was even weirder. It just kind of shocked me a little bit. And at the age that I was and in the mental state that I was in, I was not prepared to receive that. And I just didn't know what it meant and also what I could even do or should do, because it was such like a nothing thing. But also, could you even imagine? Like, it was kind of like more cringeworthy than I felt actually assaulted, because it was just like a kick on the ass. But like also, it was a kick on the ass. Like, who does that? Sure. Could you imagine you doing that to somebody on set that you have a professional relationship with? Like, it's so weird. So that happened. And yeah, I can't imagine any other guy that I've worked with doing that. Or, you know, I won't really get into other things because this happens a lot. But yeah, as a professional, that's not okay. As a person in general, that's not okay. So regardless of what it is that happens, if it's something as seemingly stupid as what I experienced, that's still something that happened. And if it makes you feel uncomfortable because it's not like your brother or your boyfriend or whatever. It's somebody that you're supposed to be having a professional relationship with who's doing this on set. Like, that's so weird. And you should absolutely not be shy about what that means to you. So I didn't do anything about it at all. I was young. I didn't really know my place. I wasn't really sure what had just happened. Like, I don't know. I didn't have the tools, the mental tools to really understand what to do. And it wasn't necessarily something that was talked about a lot back then. If that were to happen to me now, it would be a completely different story because I have the tools, I have the language, I have the experience, the life experience to be able to react to that in a different way at this point. But back then, I just simply didn't. I just didn't. And I don't think that's to anybody's fault, certainly not to my fault, but I just didn't have the experience. So I have no real advice, like solid advice for the up and coming makeup artist for that, because I did not do it the right way. I did not go about it the right way. I didn't handle it in literally any way. It was not handled. I mean, it didn't happen again, but that doesn't mean that it wouldn't have.
It's interesting because, like, just kind of like a side note.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, like, a lot of makeup artists who are just starting out, like if they're like really young, mm-hmm. you just don't feel like it's your place to say anything. You don't want to rock the boat, especially if it's going to jeopardize your career. So
yeah,
I'm sorry that happened to you, but you know, I think it's definitely like something you kind of learn from.
Thanks. I mean, it was just like a weird thing. And it's not like, again, it's not like anything was escalated and anything like real happened, like nothing,
sure.
like I wasn't assaulted or, you know, or anything like that. And I have friends who absolutely have been through that. I have close friends who have been through that, and it's heartbreaking and traumatizing. And, you know, I was fortunate enough not to have that particular type of thing happen to me, but it's still like a weird thing because, like, if you were to picture it in the opposite way, like if I would have kicked him in the ass, like, come on, like get out of the elevator. Ha ha ha. Like, you know, a random kick in the ass, like that would have been so weird.
Yeah.
And it was more uncomfortable and cringeworthy than anything else. But it was just like a weird thing. Like why would you do that? We're not friends. You're not my boyfriend. Like, it's just, I don't know, just weird.
Yeah,
weird
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. So going back to like the video world, you know, I work in lighting. I've worked with a bunch of DPs and producers, directors are always there. They're chatting with us or having a good time. And I've always noticed that so many directors and ADs kind of rush in to the makeup artist's room and be like, hey, how long is this going to take? How long is it going to take? I usually don't feel very rushed. They always take their time with camera, but they're always rushing the makeup artist to go faster, go faster, go faster. Is there anything you would want to share with the producers or ADs or directors about your process?
Yeah, I would love to. That's so funny. And the ADs know that they do this, by the way. And it's a running joke between both departments. I mean, it's an annoying joke, but it is a joke nonetheless. And they totally are self-aware that they do this to us. At least I feel like the majority of them that I work with are aware. What I'd love for them to know is just to be considerate of our time. You know, the way the talent looks is the way we leave them. So need the time that we need. We're never taking our sweet time. We're never just joking around and not working and just sipping coffee and like just having a leisurely chat. Like that's not a thing. We are professionals just like anybody else on the crew. And by the way, if you're not working with professionals in the makeup department, then that's on you to hire professionals because we take our jobs very seriously. And if the talent is on time in our chair, that's wonderful. A lot of times they're not. And then we still have to be the ones that are expected to be done on time, even if the talent was running late. So that's something that's always very frustrating. As the producer background in me just still lives on and on and on, I'm very vocal and very communicative with the people that hire me and say, listen, what's the proposed shoot schedule? Let me know how many talent I'm going to have. Like, what is the day going to look like? And then I will let you know how much time I need realistically before I can even get somebody on set for last looks. Because if I don't have that conversation with them, and this part is on me as the professional, if I don't have that conversation with them, they don't know about my job. As a producer, I didn't really know what it took for the makeup artist to do their job. I just know that they did their job. So that's not really their fault for not knowing. So it's our job to be very clear in our needs. And if they think that we're getting four people done in 45 minutes total, that's not happening. And that's not realistic. And for them to have that thought is surprising to me always, but it happens all the time.
Sure.
Because they don't know. Because maybe if they personally wear makeup, if it's a female producer and they personally wear makeup and it takes them 5 minutes to put it on, or they don't wear makeup at all, or if somebody's wife wears makeup and they just know that it takes their wife 10, 15 minutes total to get done in the morning, they think it's the same thing for television. It's not. It's totally not.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
So that's what I would wish that they would know, to have that conversation with us as a protocol. Like, sure. That should be a part of a protocol. The schedule should not be just made and then sent out. The makeup department should absolutely be a part of the creation of that schedule so that the whole day runs more smoothly. I mean, that just makes sense to me.
Sure. Yeah. It's interesting. Like, yeah, just be able to set the right expectations before the job even starts and just kind of letting them know. Because, yeah, I think sometimes an AD, especially if they're younger, they just don't know how long things take. And when you work with makeup artists who do this every single day, and they can kind of see, like, yeah, if you have four people, I'm going to need 3 hours or 4 hours, whatever it is, and just letting them know ahead of time. So that way they're not rushing you. You're not stressed out doing your job. Talent's kind of relaxed and everything kind of runs smoothly. So setting the right expectations, I think, is important. So when you're starting out as a makeup artist, I know that a lot of makeup artists that I've worked with have come from a retail background, whether it was at Sephora or like at a MAC store. Would you recommend starting in retail to kind of get your chops and just learn the trade of makeup?
That's what I did, but I kind of did that because there wasn't any other place for me to start. It was a great way to get your hands on a ton of product and interact with different customers and different personalities. And that's basically what you have to do as a makeup artist. Would I say that that's a prerequisite to makeup artistry? No, I don't think so. But is it helpful? Yeah, I do think it's helpful.
I guess you were like exposed to like different products and skin tones, skin types and stuff there.
Absolutely. It was certainly a great way to get my hands on as many faces as possible leading up to my first real onset or bridal gig that I had.
Okay. And what would you say are like some rookie errors that like a lot of makeup artists who are just starting out they make, or that maybe that you made, that you can try to offer some advice for people who are just starting out?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. And I actually do this for people as a service. So what I recommend is, for sure, do not worry about creating your kit with all of the crazy color eyeshadows and blushes and eyeliners and all of these things. Because as artists, we're usually attracted to pretty colors. And what we don't always realize when we're first starting out is that those kind of pretty color looks and the editorial or avant-garde and all of that kind of stuff, that doesn't pay the bills, especially when you are first starting out. You're not going to get those jobs. And so what will pay the bills is clean beauty, clean commercial beauty, or clean beauty in a bridal sense. So those colors are not going to be your bright teals, super bright greens, reds, whatever. They're going to be your neutral palettes, a lot of matte eyeshadows, a lot of soft shimmer eyeshadows. You can probably leave the glitter pots aside for now. You're not going to need the bright orange eyeliner, something like that. Just to keep it really small and concise, focus on the quality of product. And, you know, you don't need like 50 eyeliners to start off.
Sure, sure. This is just like another kind of side question. When you're just starting out, I don't know if you ever did this, but did you ever like barter your skills with any like DPs or photographers to kind of build your portfolio? I know that when I was trying to work as a photographer, I would have like a new lens or new light and I would love to test them out, but I didn't have anyone to help me out in terms of makeup artistry. And I had very little background in doing it myself. So would you recommend someone that's just starting out to kind of meet photographers or DPs to just get on set and just understand the process?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we all kind of do that as makeup artists, or at least we try to once in a while to just have a little fun. I think that it's really more of a test situation, right? Or a trade for portfolio kind of situation. So you collaborate with a photographer and a model, and you come up with an inspiration, a look inspiration, or mood board, or whatever it is that will benefit all of your portfolios at the time. And yeah, I mean, I still do that now, quite honestly. Haven't done that in a while, but I love doing test shoots.
Sure. Especially with like Facebook, I think it's a really good opportunity to just meet other people really easily and see their work and just exchange ideas and just try to create something for that's mutually beneficial to both the photographer, for the makeup artist, and even maybe like an actress just needs like a good headshot or something like that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially if you're just starting out, you can really hone your craft in a way that is beneficial to not only you, but the photographer there as well. So when I say that, I mean, the photographer can maybe will have more of an opportunity to see what you are capable of at that stage in the game of your career. And maybe you are now forming a relationship with a makeup artist that you like, that's reliable and that you can grow with. And have somebody to call on all the time instead of trying to like, you know, just grab somebody out of thin air. But also if you're a makeup artist or a hairstylist or whatever, and you're testing out new products that you haven't used before, it's better to test them out in that scenario instead of on a paying job, especially if it's a very unique product that you've never worked with before. So I absolutely love testing.
And like while we're on the topic of like alliances and stuff, like that, what kind of professional alliances are beneficial for a makeup artist, especially a makeup artist that's just starting out? Would you recommend that they maybe focus on DPs or photographers, producers, certain stores or, I don't know, makeup company that provides supplies for makeup artists? What kind of alliances do you think are important for someone to start out?
I think the people. So not necessarily companies or brands, because that would be a challenge to get your foot in the door if you're just starting out with a brand or a store like that. But for sure, anybody that you work on set with can be a great alliance, because you never know where they will end up. If they're a PA this year, 6 years from now, they could be an AD or a director or whatever. And you just never know where their career will take them. And same for you as well. So I always found that the most important relationships that I have accumulated or acquired over the years were with crew members, really. I mean, so even like you, Tom, like I know when you see something on Facebook or wherever, or if you have a client that's asking you for a recommendation of a makeup artist, I know that you've put my name in the ring before and I appreciate that. And I've done the same for you in MasterChef. And that kind of just goes around the entire crew. I just got my friend Dave, who's a sound guy, production sound. I just got him on a gig a couple weeks ago that I was on because the shoot was pushed and the original sound person couldn't make that job. So I put Dave's name in the ring as a makeup artist. You know, like I'm a makeup artist. I'm not the producer of that job, but they told me that they were looking for a sound guy. I know a great sound guy. Here's his name. And he got the job. So that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. You want to make sure that you are making these connections and really cultivating these relationships so that you're all remembering each other as you're moving up in the world and in the industry.
Yeah, I think that's important because as a producer, you have so many different things to worry about, you know, whether it's brewing up, getting crafty, hiring PAs, picking up supplies, making sure insurance is taken care of. So you have a lot on your plate. So for me personally, when I'm engaging with a producer, especially if they're like a new client, in addition to offering my services, I also put in emails like, hey, if you also need some recommendations of other makeup artists or sound engineers, let me know because I'd be happy to share my network with you. And it's important. It makes their life easier for them to crew up because they know that referral is coming from a credible source. And it also benefits me because that makeup artist, you or a sound engineer who I've recommended, will return the favor down the line when they get hired for a job. They'll recommend my services. So yeah, that's really important.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know that there exists like a makeup union. Are you part of the union or not? And if not, or so, like why?
There is a makeup union and I am not a part of it due to pure laziness, really, because I have all my days and I've had all the appropriate call sheets and all that for years at this point, but I just haven't submitted it. The union is phenomenal if you are trying to work in episodic television or daytime television or even many larger features. But for what I do and what I've been doing since 2009 have been mostly non-union jobs. So your corporate industrials, your branded digital content, a lot of commercials that are not union. And even the TV show that I work on right now is non-union, although they're set up, they follow all the union rules. They're just not a union show. So I have not had the need or really the desire to just go full force into the union or at least applying just because I've been so busy with other things, and that is not or has not been a priority on my list. But it's a phenomenal thing to achieve and to strive for if you can get the days that they require in order to submit an application.
Okay. And I know like Facebook groups for me as a gaffer, like it's really kind of important for me to get on there and just kind of meet other people and to just network. Are there any Facebook groups for the makeup industry that you found beneficial or that you get value out of?
Yeah, there are so many, actually. There are almost too many. And I actually run one myself. It's called Work Bish.
Okay.
As in, you better work, bish. Okay. And my group is only for, it's not a product comparison group. There are a lot of groups out there that are extremely helpful when you're, you know, deciding on which kind of products to get and what's good for this type of skin and what have you. But my group is not about that because there are so many groups that are so fantastic and cover those topics. So instead, mine is more about the business behind the beauty industry. So if you're looking for discussion about rates, if you're looking for artists to refer work to that are reliable, talented, and in your area, or not in your area, and you have a producer coming to you asking for a reference in some state across the country, it's good for that. It's good for talking about set etiquette or setiquette, as you call it, related. That's what my group is for. And then the other groups, I mean, there are just so many. One is Glossable Pro. That's a great one, although that one has moved off of Facebook and onto its own platform. So I definitely recommend people looking for Glossable Network because that's where you'll find it. Also, In My Kit. In My Kit is a fantastic one. Artist Arsenal. That's a great one too. There are so many.
Sure,
there are so
sure.
many.
Cool. Also Clubhouse. I know that Clubhouse has just recently started up and it just got on my radar. And last night you and I hosted a meetup for filmmakers on Clubhouse. What is Clubhouse and like, why is it beneficial for people in our industry to learn and benefit from?
I love Clubhouse. I did not think I was going to love Clubhouse as much as I do. I was kind of like annoyed that I had to download another social media app and like try and figure it out. But honestly, I think it might be my favorite one at this point. So Clubhouse is a social media platform, brand new. Right now it's in beta mode, and I think it's only for Apple devices right now, but they are going to be expanding, I'm assuming, shortly. But it's all talking. It's all voice related, and there's no messaging people. There's no posts. There's no photo posts or anything like that. No video. It's just audio. And something that's seemingly so simple when you think about it, really is, it's becoming an amazing platform. So what I've been using it as is just to an extension of my Facebook group so that we can really hear each other instead of just doing the keyboard warrior thing that I like to call it, and people just not hiding behind comments and stuff. But I mean, people can get a little bit mean on Facebook, depending on what group you're in. So I feel like the Clubhouse app has really allowed us to hear each other in more ways than one. So I've been loving it. I have a show also every Sunday that you've been on the last couple times. And that is for people all across the industry, regardless of your role, if you're makeup, if you're a PA, if you're crafty, if you're a G&E, AD, producer, whatever the case may be. The goal is to have every department represented for a meaningful discussion on how to move forward with our wins and struggles during this pandemic. So that's what mine is about. And yeah, it's been really fantastic so far.
Just a side question. I'm sure there's a lot that goes into being a makeup artist besides just the makeup. There's probably like the whole business end of things and how to run your business. What should a freelancer be prepared for, especially if they're early on in their career that may not even be on their radar in the makeup industry and making makeup a career move?
They should be prepared to realize quite quickly that the makeup artistry career in itself is, I would say, 70% business and 30% artistry. That's really what people don't understand. You know, when they start out, they're like, oh, the glamorous life of a makeup artist, whatever they think that it is, They see people on social media with pictures of them next to celebrities that they've worked on, or they're on set and like people that are just starting out just think that's really cool and they want to do that too. What they don't realize is it's a lot of work. And if you are a freelancer, you are your own business. So you have to take care of your taxes. You have to make sure that you set aside money either from each check or quarterly or whatever, so that you're covered with your taxes at the end of the year. You have to be the one getting these jobs. Even if you're in the union doesn't, it's not a staffing agency. So you still have to network, and it's part of business to network and go to networking events and seek them out yourself. Make sure that you're finding out the information yourself, and just anything that you can think of as a business owner. Like, you have to just keep in mind that that is your life now as a freelancer, you're a business owner, you're a sole proprietor. And I would say the best thing to do is to read as many business books as you possibly can in the first few years, and then just like continue doing that. Don't stop doing that. If you can't find time to sit down and actually physically hold a book and read, audiobooks are fantastic. That's actually what I do. I've always found audiobooks to be the easiest way for me to gain information just by listening, and I can be doing other things while I'm listening or I'm commuting or whatever's happening. But that's what I would say. Thinking of yourself and recognizing that you are a business first, that is key, because the artistry will not continue to come down the line for you if you are not a good business person. You have to network. You have to be a professional and think of yourself as a business.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I love to read, but oftentimes when I get home from set and I'm in bed at night and I start reading, I just fall asleep because I'm so tired, because the days are usually pretty long. So audiobooks for me have been like a really good source. And there's an app called Libby. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No.
Yeah, so Libby is cool because you can connect it to New York Public Library card, Brooklyn Library card. If you're in Jersey, it can connect with whatever library you use, and you have access to their entire digital collection. And so many libraries now have just a really extensive digital collection of audiobooks. So it's completely free. You can look up books on Amazon or things that interest you, and there's usually a good chance that your library has it. Or you can request your library to get it, and then you're alerted in a couple weeks. And then you can download these audiobooks for free. And I go through like maybe one audiobook a week, and it's just a great way to absorb useful content.
Oh, I'm excited for that. Thank you. I'm definitely downloading that as soon as we get off.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes too for listeners at home.
Awesome. Thank you.
So for me as a gaffer, like, I know that there's like a lull every year. It's usually around like end of December, January, and sometimes February. Is there like a lull at all in the makeup industry?
Yeah, I would say that there is. And it's probably about the same for me. I guess it also depends on what part of the industry you work in. So you and I are heavy into corporate and the smaller commercial type shoots and not so much huge features, right? And all that kind of stuff. So that inside of the industry, I do believe dies down exactly when you said it does. I will say though, that since I've been working on the TV show that I'm on, there is no necessarily downtime. When we are shooting, when we are actually working on the episodes, that can be depending on when we were picked up, when we were told we were picked up again or whatever, that could be almost any time. So my personal schedule as a makeup artist has changed tremendously in the last 3 years that I've been on the show. So sometimes I will be very busy in January when previously I was not. So that leads me to believe that if you work in television in any capacity, that maybe January and February are not as slow. But if you work a lot on small commercials, or not even small commercials, but just commercials in general and more on the corporate side of things, that, yeah, for sure, December, January, February are slower months for those industries of my business.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important thing, is to have a list of other things that you can pivot your business into that still use your skill sets. That's something that I think a lot of filmmakers overlook. And I know, like, during the pandemic, when the pandemic happened, for me, that was one of the things that I really struggled with, is like figuring out like which ways can I use my lighting skills to transition my business. I'm still trying to figure it out, but it's definitely a lot more top of mind now these days.
Yeah, it's important to have multiple streams of income. That's for sure. At least that's what I've been reading. That's what I've been reading for, you know, the past 12 years in every business book I've ever read. Multiple streams of income is key.
I don't know if there are any right now, but do you know of any particular places or events that host makeup artistry like workshops? And I know a lot of them have gone online now. There aren't as many in-person networking events, but do you know of any places that people who are interested in transitioning into makeup artistry can learn more about the industry?
Absolutely. I guess it really depends on what avenue they wish to pursue. I know that I'm an educator. I train for a cosmetics company, actually the cosmetics company that I retail. And I have trainings, virtual trainings coming up, I think the first weekend of March. I have some business classes coming on. And then if you want to search for virtual makeup artistry business classes, there are so many. I would say one in particular educator I could not possibly recommend more is Sonia Roselli. She is fantastic, especially if you want to touch on the bridal space. She has some phenomenal, phenomenal virtual classes available, and they are nominally priced. Honestly, they should be much more expensive than they are. They're certainly worth it. Another person that is a great trainer and a great educator is Margina Dennis. She does a lot of production makeup artistry business training. She's fantastic. She's been a makeup artist for many years. Danessa Myricks has some great classes. I mean, there are so many fantastic educators out there. The Makeup Show has some great classes involved with them. They've gone virtual. This is another thing, I could put a list together for you so that your listeners can check that out. Because they're honestly, it can be difficult because I have had aspiring makeup artists contact me saying they already signed up for whatever course they signed up for. And then I look into it for them and it's just complete BS, you know? And it's hard for somebody who's just starting out to recognize when they're being hosed. So yes, I think putting together a list might be very helpful for your viewers. I'll do that for you.
Sure. Are there any particular social networks or websites that you have found success in like promoting your work, whether it's Instagram or Facebook? What are your favorite networking sites, I guess, that you use?
I would say Facebook. Facebook has been my top because that's where I would say a ton of people in production have profiles on Facebook and they're actively on Facebook. And it's easy to tag somebody's name in a post when, like, if you see something like, oh, I need a makeup artist in 2 weeks for a commercial in New York City. Does anybody have anybody in mind or that they can refer? And then people will go ahead and comment and tag the people that they think would be a great fit for that job. And I think that happens all the time. I see it happening all the time. I participate in that as well when I see them. And there are plenty of groups that do that on Facebook.
Yeah, last night we were actually in a clubhouse and one of the sound engineers who were in there, his name is Robert LaRosa. He mentioned that in addition to tagging people in New York City, he also recommends different sound engineers who are in different cities in America. So he recommends sound engineers in Texas and California and Florida, where those major markets are. And I think that's important too, because you're helping the producer find people in foreign markets. And, you know, when those sound engineers who are in Florida and California are talking to their producer friends, they basically are able to tag Robert LaRosa in New York. So they're able to exchange work across America, which is also like a really super useful tool that, you know, hasn't been available to people before Facebook. So,
yeah. And you know what? I have been doing that for so many years, Tom. I have a vast network of beauty professionals around the globe that I'm connected to. And so when my producers that I work with on the East Coast, when they're traveling for work and they need to know who to hire, they always call me. And I stress that on them. I say, listen, if you ever are in need of an artist elsewhere where I'm, and there's no budget to fly me out with you, let me know because I will make sure that you're taken care of. And they appreciate that so much because then not only do they know that the person's going to be good, they know that the person's going to be reliable and that they have my stamp of approval, if you will.
Sure.
And that's one less thing that they have to worry about.
Yeah, like it's something else that we also talked about is when you get hired for a job, not only are you there to do your job that you get hired for, but just making the life of the crew, whether it be the producer or the DP, easier, whether it be through a referral or helping them carry a piece of gear. Just always treat your career as if, what can I do to help out, no matter what it is? If it's something that you can do that's within your grasp, go ahead and just do it because it's going to help someone out. And producers, especially who hire me, they'll appreciate it on so many levels. And it's very useful as a freelancer.
I agree.
All right. So just to close things up, if you're just starting out your career as a hair and makeup artist, can you offer any kind of essential pieces of advice on how to get your career started?
I would say start off by trying to meet as many people as you can in your particular craft. So if you are focusing on makeup artistry, or if you're focusing on hairstyling, because they can be two completely different roles on set, seek out and befriend, create genuine relationships with people. And you can do that through connecting on social media. That's how I have slowly but surely over the last 12, 13 years created just really amazing friendships around the world, not just even in New York City, just around the world with these fantastic people. And we all met online. We all met like lurking and kind of, you know, lightly stalking each other's profiles online. And now we are real friends, even if we still haven't met in person. We're actual friends that we talk to and we refer work to. So it doesn't happen overnight. And that's probably something else to remember. You just got to keep going. You got to keep going. If this is what you want to do as a career, don't let anybody outside of the industry tell you that, you know, you're not going to do it. It's not going to happen for you. You just have to make sure that you put pedal to the metal and just go for it. Network the crap out of yourself. Do whatever it takes to get in there and just create relationships. That is step one. All the while, you should be reading or listening to business books, practicing on as many faces as you can. Practicing on your own face is great too, or your own hair, but not everybody has the same face or hair that you do. So that's only going to get you so far. But yeah, I mean, practice, 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 read up on business and make friends. Those would be my top three things when you're first starting out.
Awesome. Well, that's great. So yeah, that pretty much just wraps up all of the questions that I had for you. Do you have any kind of like parting thoughts that you want to share with the listeners or anything at home?
If anybody is looking to get started or, you know, better their career or just network with another artist, feel free to reach out to me anytime. I'm happy to help however I can.
Sure. Yeah. And I can say firsthand that you are an amazing makeup artist as well as just an amazing human being. You're super helpful and just a great person to have on set. So look her up. I think your website's jaxmakeup.com, right?
That's it.
Yeah, it's jaxxmakeup.com. Where can people find you on social media?
On Instagram at jaxmakeup, jaxxmakeup. On TikTok is, I mean, really, I'm so lame on TikTok, but I'm trying. It's heyjaxmakeup. I had another account that was jaxmakeup, but I can't log into it for some reason. Oh, yeah. So I just started a new one. And then Clubhouse for sure, jaxmakeup. And Facebook, you can find my business page, which is obviously Jax Makeup, but also at Jacqueline Menkoe.
Awesome. Okay, well, thank you so much. I'll drop all the links and everything in the show notes. And thank you so much for just dropping so much knowledge on us and helping out the community with their careers and with tips on makeup and everything like that. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you.
All right. Have a good one.
It's shameless plug time. This week's episode is sponsored by yours truly, Tom Chavez, and my video lighting company, MasterShot Films. Since 2008, tons of productions have entrusted the MasterShot team to handle all things lighting on their interview and social media videos. The MasterShot crew of gaffers and key grips deliver and operate lighting and grip equipment throughout New York and New Jersey in our two-ton vans. Visit our website to see a virtual tour of our vans and gear. I'll drop the link in the show notes. And for the month of February, our listeners will get 25% off their first booking by mentioning the promo code COVIDBLOWS. Use the code, save some dough, and let's get back to work. And now, back to the show.
Okay, so that just about wraps up today's chat with New York-based makeup artist, Jax Menkoe. I really can't thank her enough for taking time out of her schedule in order to provide insight and tips on working as a makeup artist here in New York. If you're in production here in New York and you'd like to learn more about Jax and see some of her work, check out her website and or follow her on social media. I've included her social links in the show notes below. If you have any suggestions on show ideas or you'd like to be a guest on our upcoming show, shoot us a message on our Facebook group, Instagram, or LinkedIn. You can find us by searching at NYC Video Podcast. Also, be sure to subscribe to the NYC Video Podcast on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts to be alerted whenever we put out new shows. We also host weekly Clubhouse meetups, so check out our Facebook group to find out about more upcoming events. If you're already subscribed and you get any value out of the show, consider making a small donation to our podcast via our Patreon page to help cover some of the hardware and software costs associated with keeping the show on. You'll find a link in the show notes below. We're fully committed to providing as much value as we can to the freelance film and video community here in New York City. Thanks so much for tuning into the NYC Video Podcast. I'm Tom Chavez, and I'll see you on set.